We pray St. Paul's prayer. This is what I pray, kneeling before the Father, from whom every family, whether spiritual or natural, takes its name. Out of his infinite glory, may he give you the power through his Spirit for your hidden self to grow strong, so that Christ may live in your hearts through faith. And then, planted in love and built on love, you will, with all the saints, have strength to grasp the length and the breadth and the height and the depth, until knowing the love of Christ, which is beyond all knowledge, you are filled with the utter fullness of God. Glory be to him whose power working in us can do infinitely more than we can ask or imagine. Well, I think that prayer sums up the essence of what I'd like to share with you tonight. We're looking at Jesus' love, and we particularly looked at the love he has for God and God's love for him, and still focusing our attention on that son-father relationship. Last lecture we looked at Jesus' teaching about his Father, and tonight we're going to look at his teaching about himself as the Son, really, about how do we respond to the Father's love? What is the essence of being a son of God? What is the good news response to the revelation of God that we've looked at the last couple of weeks? Well, the first thing I'd like to say, I think is a really obvious thing, but let me just hold it before your mind, is that Jesus' mission was to everybody. He put no limits on the people to whom he spoke. That's absolutely certain, it's absolutely central, it comes right through the gospel message, the Catholic nature of his teaching. Like John the Baptist, Jesus was concerned for all Judea and all Jerusalem and, in fact, all people. So that his mission had no limits. Frequently you hear him say, "Listen, anyone who has ears to hear." So having said that, though, it's very clear from the Gospels that in a very special way, Jesus directed his mission, sensed he had a call to the ones who were called the poor. And we'll spend a little time trying as best I can to share with you the New Testament understanding of that. But firstly, just the facts. Some text that you're familiar with. Jesus, baptized by the Spirit of God, goes into the desert and begins then his preaching. And according to Luke, the first sermon of Jesus, the beginnings of his preaching in Galilee, in his own hometown of Nazareth, it says Jesus got up, unrolled the scroll till he found this text, and then having read it said, "This day this text is being fulfilled in your midst." And the text was, "The Spirit of the Lord has been given to me," just after his baptism, "for he has anointed me. He sent me," how did he see his mission? "To bring the good news to the poor." The Hebrew, the anawim, or the Greek, the ptokos, the poor. "To proclaim liberty to captives, and to the blind, new sight. To set the downtrodden free, and to proclaim the Lord's year of favor." Similarly, when both Matthew and Luke, but here I'm giving you Luke's text, begin the Beatitudes, the essential teaching of Jesus, getting to the real heart of how they remembered him and the central message he had to say. The very first words of that are, "Oh, the bliss of you who are poor. Yours is the reign of God. You who are hungry now, you shall be satisfied. You who weep now, you shall laugh." And I don't think I need to dwell longer on that. You'd have many examples yourself from the New Testament. Texts indicating a very special focus and direction from Jesus himself, explicitly understood that his mission was to the poor. Who are the poor? That's a promise there. Something's going to be, the good news is coming to the poor. There's something the poor are about to receive. The imminent reign of God. Some relief, some new life, some new hope, some special gift is going to be offered to these people. Well, I think the most honest way I know to look at it is to go back into the Old Testament and look at Jesus' own traditions and the words, the way they were used for him. And the word anawim, for example, which is in the Hebrew text there, chosen by Jesus, read out on that Nazareth occasion. I want to look with you at who they are. So the quickest and simplest way to do it is to look at Amos chapter 2, verses 6 to 7. And that reads like this. "For the crimes of Israel, I've made my decree," it's an oracle from God, "and I will not relent, because they've sold the virtuous man for silver, and the poor," Hebrew ebion or beggar, "for a pair of sandals. They trample the heads of ordinary people upon the dust of the earth, and they push the poor," Hebrew anawim, "out of their way." That was Amos' world, and it's our world, and I guess it's always been the world. And here, Amos, speaking for God, is speaking with great anger against certain people for what they are doing to the poor. These two words, which are the two most commonly used Hebrew words in the ancient scriptures, have an image behind them. I've checked it out as best I can, and I'll just share with you as much as I know. It's difficult always to move into another language and another culture and be sure. But I'm told that the ebion, that word for poor, the image behind it is a person who's reaching out, arms stretched out, in need. Words like beggar, powerless, needy, hungry, thirsty, paralyzed, blind, deaf, lonely, the last in the line, without a voice, redundant. People who have needs, and I'm talking about real existential needs of survival, people who have needs and cannot fulfill their own need, and so just have to beg, have to ask somebody else to do it because they haven't the resources to do it. The word anao or anawim has an extra element to it. It has the image of being stooped. And so it captures images like oppressed. Not just now in need, but in need because someone's on your back. Oppressed, downtrodden, deserted, deprived, outcast, despised, cast aside, humiliated, roughly treated, burdened, yoked, trapped, caught, crushed by the blows of present and permanent misery of all kinds. subservient underneath someone else. And so, needs are felt and experienced that are related to someone else's unjust behavior in my or your regard. So that Jesus coming with a good news to the poor, well, is coming to people such as I've described. And now I'd like to say something that I think is really important. It's an insight I took many years to get myself, and not too long ago either. I used to think, I no longer do, and I hope I've advanced in knowledge rather than retreated, I used to think that blessed are the poor, you had to find some quality in the poor which made them blessed. So that being poor, there's some quality, that, and I'm sure there are some qualities in that. But that, I don't think, is the key to the New Testament statement. I think Jesus is saying, blessed are the poor because something marvelous is going to happen to take you out of that poverty. You're blessed. He's not speaking about something in the poor particularly, I don't think. He's not speaking about putting them up as examples to everyone to look at, but he's talking about God. He's talking like Moses would have said when he went into Egypt and said, blessed are the oppressed, because the redemption is at hand. There's a blessing here for you. Let's move. Provided, and there's always an if, and I'll spend all night on that if, provided something happens. There's an opportunity and a blessing and a grace and a reign of God which is now imminent, the reign of God is at hand, and which is going to be perceived as a blessing by the people that we've been describing there.